Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
My guest is George Newbern. He's a very well-known actor. He is the voice narrator of the new novel, We Begin at the End, by Chris Whitaker. The book's available in audiobook in CD format, and you get it on Audible and all those other services where you can get audiobooks. And it's a fantastic thriller of a book involving family and crime, all kinds of sorts of things. But George, you know, we know you from Father of the Bride. We know you from Scandal. We know you from Adventures of Babysitting, the voice of Superman. And just when you thought your career couldn't get any better, you're out with doing audiobooks now, and this is really something. Yeah. So how'd you get into the audiobook format?
You know, it's something I sort of sought out because I knew a couple of folks that were doing it before, and as an actor, as you well know, it can be very capricious, and I've got a family, and I love to work, and I'd done a lot of voiceovers before, and I sort of thought, man, this would be a great way to keep my brain active and occupied and explore a part of, my career that I haven't really done before. And I also feel like I'm a little more in charge of it. You know, I can direct myself. I can pace myself. I feel like I'm a sort of a one-man band in my little studio at my house. So it's actually quite satisfying. It's the hardest work I think I've ever done, honestly, because it takes so long to do these things. But I think it's probably some of the most satisfying work I've ever done.
Well, it has to be something where it's almost like a Broadway actor. Every chapter has to sound completely fresh and the same as the previous chapter, right? Even though you're maybe doing this for 3 or 4 hours at a sitting. So how do you break up the time to make it sound so fresh?
Well, yeah, first of all, try 6 or 7 hours at a sitting. I usually sort of devote the first 6 hours of the day to this. But, it's like athletic. I have to say it's kind of an athletic job because you have to engineer, you have to direct yourself, you have to perform it, act it, or sort of interpret it, all the while listening for sounds out of your ear, like the lawnmower guy going by, or the plane going overhead, or somebody screaming. You know, it's truly a full body experience trying to get this right. It's great. You know, you have to sort of close your eyes, take a breath, walk outside, take a drink of water, and start the next chapter.
Is this an acting role that you audition for? How do they come into your, how do you get the role of the narrator for a particular book?
Well, I was doing Scandal at the time, and I thought, you know, this would be a great time to actually sort of find something that is, you know, that I could sort of keep going after Scandal's over, in addition to on-camera stuff. And I went to New York and went to a publisher's convention and met a lot of publishers and met a local guy, Dan Musselman at Penguin Random House, is a great guy, and he gave me my first book, and then the Dions in Los Angeles. And then after that, I'm on the horn for myself. I don't have an agent for this, so I sort of cultivate 6 or 7, 8 relationships with folks all over the country, and I call them, and, you know, we just go from there, and whenever they have something, and sometimes I'll audition for things, but mostly it's offer stuff. And I love to do anything. I love doing, you know, sort of nonfiction, and I love doing fiction and biographies and anything that comes. I really kind of have a blast doing it. It's sort of a new extra jolt, sort of next phase, you know.
One of the ones that you did recently was the Mike Nichols biography, and I just had Mark Harris on a month or so ago, and we talked about him. And, you know, his acting career had a trajectory where, or his directing career and producing career had a trajectory where he had some hits and a lot of ebbs and flows in that career. And so I would think reading that, not only just reading the book, but then doing it as a voice actor, you have to feel a little bit of that because you have to get a lot of the feelings that Mike Nichols had throughout his life as an actor, or excuse me, as a producer.
Oh my God! I was just talking to a director friend of mine, actually, about that audiobook, and we were marveling at his ability, Mike Nichols' ability to straddle so many different genres in his life. And I mean, there's nobody that I know of that was that just so well versed in all these different fields and so successful in it. He would do a bad movie and then run into a hit Broadway play and then go from hit Broadway play to then something huge, a great movie. He just and he had this such personal struggles, you know, when he came over from from Europe as a young kid. He had had alopecia and struggled against these things. And I mean, I don't envy his personal life, honestly, but he's a certainly a remarkable man, and I learned so much reading these books. I learned so much. Every book I read, I feel like I'm like taking a class, you know.
Do you read it all through in one sitting, or maybe two or three times before you have the voices in your head as to how you want to actually perform it?
Well, it depends on what the book is. If it's a nonfiction, I kind of dive in and do it all at once. I do the research while I'm doing it because it's simply not enough time in the day to read a 400-page biography before you actually read a 400-page biography. So you do, you know, you do some research on pronunciations and whatnot. But with fiction, like a crime, like we begin at the end, which is sort of a mix of all of that. You definitely have to read through the book and maybe not read every page of it, but you need to know who the characters are and set the voices and find out who does what and, you know, the major plot points. So you have a sort of a map that you're navigating and trying to modulate, you know, dramatically. But honestly, I don't think it's possible to read every page of every book you're doing if you're doing a lot of them, because you simply wouldn't have time to eat. So I do my research, specifically with this, with We Begin at the End, there were so many characters and so many, sort of a super intricate plot line. My gosh, it was very complicated. It took place over 30 years. You really have to do your homework or you're going to get caught, you know, you're going to get caught.
Do you find yourself reading for pleasure the same way that you read for an audiobook? And by that I mean, when I read for pleasure, I have a certain style to it. I admit I skip a couple paragraphs once in a while because I know where it's going. I don't need to read it, and I just want to get through the story. Do you find yourself reading differently now for pleasure when you know you have to read every word when you're doing an audiobook?
You know, I do. I tend to actually, I know people who are audiobook narrators who are just, even when they're not reading, they're reading books. I can't do that. My brain, I swear, I feel like I burn so many calories when I'm narrating an audiobook because you're engaging so many systems in your body that I'm literally exhausted when I'm done every day. So I tend to not read another book. I sort of scan articles and, you know, I'll read articles that are interesting to me, but I really don't have to spend that time sort of like carrying on my life and hanging out with my family and doing things, you know. So I really don't read in the off time as much.
Do you have any relationship with the authors to get an idea of their sense of things before you start these?
Sometimes I'll have a director, actually. Random House and Macmillan and a couple of these, actually not for this one, but I have before had, Zoom directors and online directors to help. But sometimes I'll connect with the author, sometimes I don't. If they have something specifically, you know, about, you know, pronunciations is the thing that kills me, you know, and if someone's, you got to get it right, otherwise you're going to go back and have to redo huge sections of the book. So in that sense, either me or somebody at the publishing house needs to contact the author. So we're in touch with the author, but I don't always talk to them, you know, personally. I have a couple times, but not all that much.
Are you reading this off of an electronic format, or are you reading the book? How's that actually work?
I have an iPad, and it comes in a PDF form. So I have in my little studio, it's a 4x4 booth, basically. But I have my iPad that's on a stand, and then a computer monitor and a keyboard, a Bluetooth keyboard, and then I have my computer out in sort of 5 feet away outside the booth that's sort of working the whole thing. So yeah, it's a silent, when I started this, I was using paper, you know, we were using paper in it. You know, you had to be quiet every time you turn the page, and that was such a pain. But with the, using the iPad and PDF form and the digital format, it's really changed the speed with which you can do these, the ease, really.
Well, I've seen that you've done these over the years. I thought, finally, after the phrase was coined so many years ago, this is truly an independent communications consultant in a way. I mean, this is right.
Nice reference.
I mean, we're close, right?
So. Computer consultant, I think. That's funny.
I'm chatting with George Newbern. He is the voice narrator of the brand new novel from Chris Whitaker, We Begin at the End. And George got all kind. George has all kinds of audiobooks out there that he has narrated, and quite a few of the very famous bestsellers too. I know you did Val Kilmer's autobiography, and you were one of the voices on the trial of the Chicago Seven. The transcript that came out. That had to be fun, right?
It was fun. I mean, you know, it's not a fun subject, but it was neat to do. It was, you know, it's hard. A lot of times I get these multiple narrator audiobooks, and, you know, it takes a lot of coordination, and the actual finished time on the book for myself or for my character is not that much, but it does involve a lot of coordination with other readers to make sure we're all, you know, on the same page in terms of... maybe accents. Sometimes multiple narrators will have to read the other person's part. You have to coordinate with the other actor. And how are you doing this voice? And so, but with Trial of the Chicago Seven, it was just neat because it was part of history, and it felt like, you know, I knew Aaron Sorkin was doing the movie, and kind of knew this was going to be sort of the moment, you know.
Well, you know, I've thought your acting career has been very interesting. You essentially graduated Northwestern University in Chicago and then took off for California, a very gutsy move. And so you go out there, but are you essentially just pounding on doors trying to get a role? How'd you get out to L.A.
Get a footing? I didn't do it sort of out of the blue. I mean, I was a theater actor. I was a musical theater actor. I was a ballet dancer. I thought I was going to be doing musical theater when I was at Northwestern. But my senior year, I had an audition for a movie in L.A., and I said, wow, this is really great. And they said, oh, we want to fly you out to test you. So they flew me out to L.A., and the movie was Back to the Future. And they were just about to start production. So they had all the sets and all the cast members, everybody had wardrobe, and I did all my a nine-hour screen test with Leah Thompson and with all the actors who were already cast. So I got down to the very last three that didn't get it, but that experience sort of told me, I said, well, you know, maybe I should go to L.A. instead of New York, where, you know, I know what that's going to be, and I didn't know what L.A. was, so I felt like, you know, while I'm younger, I should probably do that first, I kind of never left.
Did you screen test for Marty McFly then?
I did, yeah, I was down to the last three.
Well, and they ended up going with somebody, they went with somebody they never ended up finishing with, right?
Right, they started with Eric Stoltz, who was the kid in Mask, and now he's a director, and then they fired him after 3 weeks. I think there were some attendance issues involved. Then they had Michael Fox, who I think they originally had wanted, who was not available. But I was so blown away. Just to be there and the whole process for me just absolutely made my head explode. Pretty cool.
Well, then the whole experience with Father of the Bride, that's got to be something that got you recognized walking down the street immediately, right?
Sure. Sure. Yeah. I mean, my career, I've had a lot of ebb and flows, but generally I go down, you know, if I'm at the airport, or people know me from one or two or three things, or they think they know you, went to high school with you, but so it's been fun. I've had a fun career. I don't like to sit still. So this is a great job for me.
The role you had on Scandal, I always thought was interesting because that's a show where it was almost like 24. You could be killed off at any time. Is that nerve-wracking?
Oh, God, every week. Oh, it was absolutely nerve-wracking. I never, I wasn't a regular. They didn't make me a regular till the last seasons. But even though I did enough episodes to be a regular, so I never knew if I was going to be killed off. So it was absolutely terrifying for the first 5 years of that because I would go to the table reading. I was like, oh, here we go. I'm going to get it.
And then you got the girl, and then you know you're safe, right?
Well, I don't know. I just know that last year, I was a regular. So, well, so as far as I was concerned, I was like, good, they can kill me now. But, you know, it was great. That was maybe my most favorite job I've had because it was just such an insanely great group of people and great writing and it was popular. And, you know, it's pretty rare to get that combination.
Doing the voice of Superman, that has to open you up to a whole new genre of fans or type of fans because you're now in doing these comic cons and things like that. That was that's got to be a different experience for you.
Oh, it's complete. It's like another planet. It's literally, but it's really cool. I have to say, I have lots of different facets to my career, and I kind of enjoy them all. And and this animation stuff that I've done, and some video game voices, and the Comic Cons where you really get to meet the fans. It's been a blast. You can be in Hollywood and do your on camera stuff, and you're sort of in an isolated bubble. But when you go out and meet folks at these gatherings, it's really cool because it's a I was shocked at the enthusiasm for that fan base. It's huge. It's absolutely mammoth.
Are they different than fans of movies who have a harder time separating the person from the role?
Complete. Well, I don't know if they have a hard time. They're completely different fan base. Most people that come to these things don't even know any on-camera work I've done. I mean, very few of them. It's all their animation and video game and, you know, anime and all the rest of it. They live in a different world, most of them. Some recognize from other, but it's kind of fascinating. It's, you know, I didn't grow up being a comic book fan, but I sure know a lot more about it now, I'll tell you that.
Are you able to use your home studio for most of your voiceover stuff?
Yes, actually. I'm telling you, the pandemic really, I know you've heard it, we've all heard it a million times, but in the voiceover world, it really, really changed it, because now we have technology that I can, with my software and my Wi-Fi, I have the broadcast quality on that I can download, but in real time, an engineer for a cartoon, I just did a cartoon the other day, and the engineer, I think they were in New York, I'm not sure where they were, but he's looking at the waveform on my computer at the same time I'm looking at it. I'm seeing his picture in my computer screen, we're talking back and forth, but in real time, he can get the actual signal that he needs. So I don't ever have to go into a studio. I mean, I have my own 4x4 booth, or the guy could be in London or Cairo, Egypt. It doesn't matter, and he can direct, engineer it real time, get the information, and move on. It's insane.
So the whole days of a whole cast being in the studio doing this is over, right?
I'm afraid. Way, yeah. I mean, it would just be considered a luxury at this point. You know.
Does that affect your performance when you're not with anybody?
I think so. I think it's not as good, but you know, probably for ensemble animation for the regular 4 or 5 characters, I think they probably still get together. But that's the exception, honestly.
Well, I know you and the cast of Father of the Bride reunited and did Father of the Bride 3-ish, and you really took the pandemic thing into account for it, yeah, and did just a brilliant 25-minute thing on YouTube, but it was a fundraiser. But when I don't remember, I mean, I loved the movies when they came out, obviously, but I don't remember people clamoring for a Father of the Bride 3, and I remember as I started it, I thought, this thing is either going to be excellent or it's going to suck. It's going to go one of two ways, and it was excellent. And was that in mind, too, as you guys did it, that this has to be the right project?
Yeah, I mean, you know, gosh, I'm available. That's all I told Dan. He said, let's go. Let's do it. But I think it was a tricky thing to do, to pull off. But I'm knowing Nancy Myers, she doesn't do anything halfway, and it was such a fantastic sort of effort. I mean, they had, you know, we're in the middle of the pandemic, like in the fat middle of it, and, you know, she managed to get all the DPs and, you know, art directors, and they had guys come to your house in masks and put up a green screen and set up the cameras. It was very technical. And but then the script she wrote and the cast she got together and the concept that was so well executed. And I, you know, I think they could do a third one, honestly. I think there would be an appetite for it, but we'll see. Who knows?
Well, you know, and I think those of us in the entertainment consumer world versus the ones that you guys do this acting, you know, it's been 30 years since you guys did these roles. And so for us, you're still, you know, the sun on there to us as we watch the movie.
Yeah, right.
But when you try to jump back into that role after doing hundreds of roles since then, is that a difficult task?
Not really. I mean, you know, that part especially is just sort of a part of my personality that you just accentuate. I think it was actually kind of harder to do because it's a guy who has to sort of have no edges. He has to have zero. It has to be pretty smooth and round so that he can't. So it gets to the father-in-law. You know, so it's not really a part that's necessarily that challenging, but it's hard. It's hard to not have flaws. I guess that's my point.
Well,
kind of perfect.
Yeah, and the way that it played off, and you know, now Maddie's married and all that. But
right.
With you, and I know you didn't have a huge role on it, but there had to be stuff that was cut out. There's got to be a cut reel off
that,
right?
We had two or three scenes that were cut out, but yeah, I had a couple of good funny bits where they got cut, but that's the way it goes.
All right. Well, this has just been fascinating. The book that you're actually here promoting, We Begin at the End by Chris Whitaker. It's George Newbern. He does the audio for that, and it's a fantastic read and listen, so go pick that up. George, just a fantastic talk, and thanks for joining me to talk about this.
Thank you, man. Thank you. Good talking to you. Have a good day.
You too.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vakulskis. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.